This is Via VHS.
Welcome to another episode of the Via VHS Retro Movie Podcast. I'm going to tell you right off the bat, I don't know if I've ever been more excited to do a review for a particular film. Now, I don't look it. I am a little tired. I'm a little tired right now. But as we talk about A Knight's Tale, I'm sure I'll get more and more excited and I'll get hyped up and ready to go. So, first of all, let's go to California, all the way across the continent to our co-host, Spencer, or Pete Provo.
Pete Provo and our secret club names from the other recording program that we're not using.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That was the thing. It was like, oh, the Riverside FM has, you can put kind of fake names up, which are like, they're probably going, well, that's supposed to be for your real name. No, you can put fake names.
Yeah.
And that's like, I'm Rex Daytona. Skype, so now it's like, oh, I guess we could use our regular ones. I don't know, but it was fun having code names. Made you feel like you're at camp.
I'm
like,
going to keep
We should have
been
doing this podcast like on like a string tied to a cup.
Yeah, we're keeping the names. I don't know how I'm going to use them yet, but to the uninitiated, I'm Rex Daytona,
and I'm Pete Provo,
and you're Pete Provo. We're going to have to. We have some guests coming on in the next couple of weeks, so we have to get them nicknames. Alex, who's going to be on an episode, I think next week, already has a nickname, so we got to get. We got to get Ryan
a
nickname.
He's going to get Ryan a nickname, and he can find something.
Yeah,
he's crafty like that.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Like, you're a little bit tired from, like, the previous weekend, but, you know, coming in strong, still talking about, like, really, like, a super classic film, you know, one of those amazing, you know, kind of beginning DVD era must-haves. That's what I always kind of look at it as.
I think I've said this before, and I always get mixed up, so I'll never have a definitive answer to this statement. But I'm pretty sure Knight's Tale was one of the first DVDs I bought. Pretty damn positive on that one. I know Gladiator was there too.
Yep. Well, I can tell you for sure that this is definitely in my top five first DVDs bought. The only ones that kind of precede this one is Spaceballs and True Lies. I bought those ones before I even had a DVD player. And then when I got a DVD player, I remember, like, me and my mom ordered off, like, from a catalog thing. And Knight's Tale was one of them. Gladiator was another. I think I got the Total Recall, the one that came in the moon, or, like, not the moon, the Mars case. Whereas, you know, doesn't fit nicely in your DVD rack. And, like, a couple other films and so on. But that definitely, Knight's Tale was one of those.
I, also VHS.
Oh, you gotta have the VHS. Oh, yeah, well, if you do that, I can pull up the DVD!
Product placement!
Nobody's got the Blu-ray, I guess.
Well, I really wanted to hold up the VHS tape, because I should clarify, this is going to be, by far, in any episode of Via VHS ever, the most recent movie.
2001 represent.
Yeah, 2001. just celebrated its 20th anniversary last week. I've decided how I'm going to handle the VHS era. Every year, as time progresses, once 2002 is 20 years ago, 2003 is 20 years ago, I will add those movies all the way up until 2004, I think. And then it's just the VHS era is done. We'll have to find some type of alternate podcast to record things for 2004 and up, but
it'll be via DVD.
DVD DVD dreams or something. I don't know.
Well, because realistically, DVD at this point is already kind of like, you know, the archaic system anyways. It fits along with VHS and Laserdisc and those big old plastic ones that you'd get like in the 70s.
Yeah. I mean,
they call those video cassette. No, not video cassette. Video. The hell? It looked just like the most ginormous floppy disk you ever seen.
The thrift store near me has hundreds of them.
Does it?
Yeah.
I would love that. There's certain ones that I only see them every once in a while, but there's like, if it was a certain movie, I would almost like buy it so I could just kind of hang it on the wall.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and look and see what they have because I'm very intrigued by it. But yeah, I mean, Night's Tale is on VHS, so even though this is a newer film, you know, we still got
VHS, I always feel like it goes up to like 2005, 6. Like, it sounds weird, but it's like they still sold them around that time period in stores.
This particular one was bought at a Blockbuster Video on December 10th, 2001.
Okay, so that one's, because I know if you have a version that comes before 9/11, it has the trailer for Spider-Man on it where he swings through like the Twin Towers.
Wow.
So that's the thing. I know my DVD didn't have it, so I was like, okay, my DVD's obviously past that point.
Probably has it.
And then, you know what? There was another weird factoid while I was researching this movie, that apparently the in-flight movie for 9/11 was A Knight's Tale. So the last thing before you were hijacked, you were watching Heath Ledger. So, you know, it's kind of sad, but at least it's like, you know, at least they had a good movie. That's all I have to say. You know, it's better. There could have been something so much worse than that.
I was so excited to get to this review. I'm so excited to watch Night's Tale, and you just bring it down so far. It's like, hey, so let's talk about Night's Tale. Hey, you remember 9/11?
I love how there are so many 9/11 related facts in this movie. I mean, I know it's like that time period where, like, right when 9/11 happened, it like shifted movies around like really like drastically and
Born
so
Identity
on.
Was
and
affected.
Even though this is like 1400s, it's like it still gets affected by it.
Yeah, everything. And then after 9/11, everything in production, the paradigm completely shifted and the tone completely shifted. Gritty realism sets
in. Grounded reality era of the 2000s is what I always call it.
Yeah. I mean, the 2000s was not a good movie decade anyway. Well, the first half of it. Once you get to about 2005, it starts getting better. But this is one of the gems in there. I mean, there's a lot of good movies
still. I still love, there's a lot of just magic movies in the 2000s. And I almost will say this, that like, I remember kind of growing up in about that era, like I wasn't nearly as excited for those movies, you know, at the time for some of them, because it was just like that ground reality. I wanted the over the topness of like, you know, the 80s and the 90s. And like, it was starting just to shift to like, I used to always call it like the time period where like you just get the generic looking characters that just had the shaved head and they all kind of looked the same. Like nobody really had like character anymore and so on like that. But when you go back to that time period and you find certain movies in there, or you find those, like, I always call the other section of it, the post-Matrix era, I love those type of movies, too, because some of those can be so goofy and fun, but, like, you know, those are the movies that feel really old in a sense. Like, you know, it one time period that wasn't that far back, but when you watch things kind of like almost like that ultraviolet, or you watch like even just like the early Resident Evils and so on like that, like it's like a time machine.
Yeah.
You know,
with this movie, I mean, it's kind of timeless. It kind of fits in anywhere, and it could have worked in the 90s, could have worked in the 80s. You know, it's one of those films that just hits all the right notes, everything that it was going for, it knocked it out of the park, in my opinion. But we'll get to that. Remind everybody what's going on here. So I mentioned a few episodes ago, we're doing this kind of series, indefinite. I don't know how long we're going to do this, and just until I guess we're tired of it. But we're just kind of doing about me movies, kind of like this is to get to know us movies, as we're bringing in new listeners, hopefully, and putting the show out there as much as I can. This is a way for y'all, the listeners, to get to know us a little bit better. So last week we did Last Action Hero, movie that you love, huge impact on you, watched it as a little kid. This one is definitely the same thing for me. Huge deal to me. But I found it a lot later. Obviously this movie came out when I was 16, so this isn't one of those childhood classics. This is more my formative years. And it just perfect movie at the perfect time for me.
Did you see this one in cinemas?
No.
Ah. See, because this movie, when this one came out, this was one of those ones that was like, it was like me and my mom went to go see it, you know, because she was like, oh, that looks like fun. And I felt like this movie was very like, almost, it worked a lot for a lot of moms, because a lot of my friends, parents, and so on, that's like, this movie was like a big hit with them. And it's like, it was one of those ones that kind of worked on both levels. I felt like it was good for kids, good for, like, you know, adults, good for teenagers and so on. Like, it was fun all the way around, you know. And I think also just kind of, like, one of the biggest things about it is having that classic rock soundtrack in it in an ancient times movie. And I think just that in itself, especially, like, with that trailer. Because I just remember seeing the trailer, you know, before, you know, it came out with other films and whatnot, too. And you had the Queen soundtrack playing and everything like that. And really, I was trying to think about it when I was watching this movie. I'm like, was there a movie that came beforehand that did the classic rock soundtrack or something of that kind of similar caliber, but with like ancient times movies? And I couldn't really think of one. I know there, you know, probably if you looked hard enough, there is something, because mostly there's always somebody that does it before somebody else. But
Well, first of all, we talked about the soundtrack on the Last Action Hero episode, which was a great soundtrack. I didn't own that one though. I own this one.
Yeah.
This was right up my alley. I mean, I'm a huge classic rock fan. That's what I still listen to mostly. You know, I just listen to the shit my mom listened to in high school. That's like where I'm at. A lot of Bob Seger, you know, a lot of stuff. Rolling Stones are my favorite, you know, but this AC/DC was here on the soundtrack. Queen, you have that weird Robbie Williams and who is it? I can't remember. It's a good soundtrack. I just know that. It's a really, really good soundtrack.
It's got, you know, like Low Riders on there. It's got a lot of the songs that would be in like Dazed and Confused. That's like, it's the weirdest thing to think about, but like the soundtrack's kind of like, take the Dazed and Confused soundtrack and sort of apply it here. And for the most part, that's kind of like what it is.
Yeah, it's, this movie's weird as shit. Okay. Like, usually when you have anachronistic movies like this where they're, you know, shifting time frames, it's like going, it's usually taking something old and making it contemporary, like the Romeo and Juliet, Baz Luhrmann one with Leonardo DiCaprio. It's like old school dialogue. It's literally, you know, Romeo and Juliet, but they just put it in this weird
90s
time frame.
Is all can be.
It's the most 90s shit you'll ever see. It really is. It's just oozes 90s. So there's a lot of movies where they take things from the past and they put it in a contemporary setting. But this one, it's an old story. I mean, it's A Knight's Tale has been, I mean, I think it was part of the Canterbury Tales. Chaucer wrote this, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
It's pulled from there. I saw out some of the things that the director said. He kind of pieced it in the time period that there's like a 6 month period where like there's like stories missing.
Yes.
And so it's technically supposed to fit in there. So that means they could kind of do whatever they want.
Yeah. Which they did. They clearly did. He did whatever he wanted with this movie and got away with it, which is incredible. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of movies that do this where it goes back in time, but like, we're just going to have classic rock in there. We're going to open up this film with We Will Rock You. And there's going to be a bunch of peasants at a jousting match and they're going to be stomping along the Queen, and it's going to make sense and it's going to work. Just get on board or get the fuck out. Basically, like that's where this movie is.
Yeah. It's totally like an in or you out moment and so on. But I think what makes the movie kind of like really good is because like this movie could be one of those movies that could be kind of almost slapsticky, like a Mel Brooks thing. Not saying that that's like a bad thing, but like it could be that. But what I like about it is it's like it's still like a true serious night story that just happens to have a sprinkle of comedy and then has the classic rock soundtrack over it. But it's not like any of that takes away from it. It actually just more adds more depth to it in a weird way, you know?
Yeah, it's one of the, there's not a whole lot of movies that pull off what this movie does. I'm not saying that this movie is as good as Star Wars, okay? Or even Guardians of the Galaxy. I like it better than Guardians of the Galaxy, but just in terms of general opinion, I wouldn't necessarily put it up there. But it has some of those similar elements where random group of characters, ragtag team, the you get to know the characters over time. There's an adventure setting. And there's camaraderie, and you get attached to everyone, and it just, the supporting characters make the, you know, the heroes so much better and the villains so much better. It's hard to pull that off. I mean, it's like the difference between like Independence Day and Godzilla 98. Same director, a lot of fun, but I really like the characters in Independence Day, and I do not like Matthew Broderick and Godzilla. Like, it's and so all these characters are super likable, but man, this film, they, to me, it really is, even though it's cheesy and hokey and kind of predictable at times, it's almost a perfect movie in terms of what it's trying to be.
Oh yeah, it literally is like one of those movies, like, just even watching it again, because it's been a little bit of time since I've seen it. Like, I watched it a lot back in the day, but I probably haven't watched it in like at least 10 years or so. And it's one of those ones when you kind of watch it, like, there's never a bad beat in the entire movie. Mm-hmm. It keeps going the whole way. You are sold all the way throughout it, you know. So just speaking real quick on some of the movies, like, something that it feels like, if, you know, it's in like a similar kind of vibe to, is when I think of like the 1990 or 91, maybe it's 92, the Three Musketeers movie, the one with Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
It has – that movie's probably like the closest thing. If that movie just had a classic rock soundtrack, they could almost be part of like the same series, it seems like.
Yeah. No, you're actually right. That movie did have some contemporary elements to it, and it definitely didn't make jokes. Like, the best way to understand the way A Knight's Tale is, like, it's using almost current day, you know, language, but it feels like they're in medieval times. But that part in the movie, spoiler alert if you've never seen it, but it's a small little part where she puts the Nike logo on the armor. That's A Knight's Tale. That's like, that's where we're at. We're doing contemporary ideas and jokes, modern day jokes, in a past setting, and somehow we're going to make it work. And it, for the most part, all those little in jokes work.
Yeah, or it's like, there's the other line that I always really think of a lot too, is like when the one like lady calls the Lance like the stick or whatever. He's like, "It's called a Lance. Hello." You know, because that right there tells you that, that's, if there's a line in that movie that can take you, that can pinpoint you back to a certain time period, it's like, oh, that line right there, you know where you kind of were.
Yeah.
That kind of phrase. But it's still like, it's like one of those ones, it works. It's like, it's almost like not so off. It's like, it almost like merges the two together, and then it still feels like it fits like sewn in.
Yeah, well, the way I've always described this movie, and the reason it's so important to me, it's like, if aliens from outer space came down and hacked my brain, and they were like, okay, what we're going to do with this information is just make, we're going to make the perfect movie for Wesley. This is going to like hit all the right notes. I mean, I love history. So at this time, I'm into Gladiator. I'm into Braveheart. I'm into historical fiction, The Patriot, even if you want to throw that in there, definitely historical fiction, you know? So this is the kind of stuff I'm into at this point in time. Knight's Tale comes along, has all that element, but I'm really into comedy also, as really lighthearted. There's a lot of levity. And then also classic rock. It threw all the elements of things I like. So it almost feels like this movie was tailor-made for me. Like, they made a movie for me specifically. And that's, it's so weird, but I've always felt that way. Now, I know that's not what happened. So anybody who thinks,
but you're the ultimate target audience demographic.
Yeah, like, if you can put the demographic, if you can narrow it down to one singular point, I feel like I'm that point. Like, that's how attached I am to this movie.
You would be the one at the focus group that would like the movie so much they would have to write you off, being like, well, he likes it too much, so exactly. Let's go to the guy below him.
Exactly, yeah. And this movie, I mean, it's fairly well-reviewed. I mean, it's in the 60s, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes and different things like that. Some people liked it, some people didn't. It's probably accurate. I mean, this movie is not high art, but it is to me.
Yeah, well, this to me is like a perfect example of just an ultimate fun flick. Like, you know, like when, you know, everybody's kind of got those certain like handful of movies that they can kind of just almost throw on whenever, always puts you in a good mood. You can kind of jump into it almost at any scene. Knight's Tale really fits into that very well. Like, it's one of those ones that's just, it's so dialed in.
Well, also, you know, I forgot to mention something about this movie. At this time, I'm still playing football, really into sports, obsessed with, you know, kind of getting out of the wrestling phase a little bit, but I'm still kind of there. But I'm definitely into all sports at this point in time. That's just what I care about. And this is actually in terms of what you want out of a sports movie, this is more of a sports movie than Bull Durham is, even though it's medieval jousting. It hits all the sports elements that you usually look for in a sports movie. And then it's Rocky with knights. It's medieval Rocky, but funny on purpose.
Yeah. Well, that's really, at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's just like, hey, let's take jousting and let's just amp it up like it's a touring sports league thing and really just hit, you know, all the kind of sports kind of like tropes. But since we've never seen that really use of jousting, because that's the other thing, too. It's like, okay, I can think of movies that have maybe a jousting scene, but can you think of any other movie that's core element is jousting?
No.
Yeah, I know. As I said, that maybe there's something like in the 30s or something out there like that that we just kind of, you know, aren't seeing. But for the most part, like, it's all jousting. Treats it like you're watching a baseball, a football, you know, a boxing movie, anything like that. You know what I mean? It's like you got your team, you got your pit crew in a sense, almost more than anything else. That's almost sort of how it's looked upon, you know. And it's going up and just, you know, winning those trophies, going to the majors.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is also, too, it's shot incredibly well. Like, it's not an afterthought. Like, they're like, let's make jousting look cool as shit. And they do. Mm-hmm. And then you're watching it, like, why is this not a sport now?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we don't have to use horses. We could just, you know, figure something out.
Motorcycles. See, you know what I mean? Geez, you could do it in between, like, a, you know, a tractor pull, or you could do it like alongside monster trucks. But no, you watch it and you're like, dude, like it's so cool. I mean, I guess you always have the jousting at like the Renaissance Fair and so on, but a lot of times those ones, they always kind of go like, well, it'd be cool to see some actual athletes and not just a couple of nerdy guys getting shoved up on horses and running each other with like foam bats.
It's just really extensive LARPing at that point.
Yeah.
It's like really thought out LARPing at that point. So Knight's Tale, A Knight's Tale, 2001. So it's 20 years old on the 11th, I believe. So May 11th, 2001. So when this came out, cannot believe this movie is 20 years old.
I know. Because as I said, I saw it in the theaters.
Mm.
I can remember sitting there watching it. Probably saw that Spider-Man swinging past the Twin Towers trailer.
Gosh, now I'm going to have to plug this into the VCR and see.
Yeah, you got to.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no, because yours did say December on its date, though, didn't it?
Well, yeah, it was bought then, but, I mean, who knows when.
Oh, bought then. Okay.
Yeah, that's just like a receipt kind of thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it might. We'll see.
You never know.
A Knight's Tale, 2001, so, of course, starring Heath Ledger. Mm-hmm. Sure, we'll talk about him a lot. Rest in peace. Mark Addy, Rufus Sewell, Shannon Sossaman. I've seen her in like a couple other movies, and then she kind of disappeared, I feel like.
I almost want to say this was her first like movie. Like, I think she was in TV beforehand, but this is her first like movie.
It might be. She played in some really terrible movie with the guy from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, I think she was in a bunch of, I don't know, I was even kind of flipping through her sort of list, and I was like, oh, yeah, she was in a bunch of those kind of goofy movies. Like, mostly a lot of those movies that, like, I would have bypassed.
Yeah, exactly. So, Alan Tudyk, who I love.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love Alan Tudyk. He's kind of like, he does a lot of voice acting now, too. Real acting, but voice acting. And then he's also kind of like the poor man's, oh, my gosh, Planet of the Apes, Gollum. Andy Serkis.
Oh, Charleston Heston? Oh.
Yeah, no, that. Yeah, you're wrong. Yeah. Like, you're wrong like and right simultaneously.
I almost said that like Mark Wahlberg. I'm like, well, he doesn't mean Mark Wahlberg.
Dude, we got to review.
That was my first go-to, the 2001.
We got to review that one, too.
God, I would love to, because I haven't seen that movie since it came out. Like,
really?
You know, but I watched it when it first came out, and then like I haven't probably seen it since. Whatever, I can't remember. I almost want to say it was 2001, but it's right around then.
I'm pretty sure it is 2001. Yeah. I think it's on HBO Max. We'll get back to Knight's Tale, but yeah, we should do that one because I like some elements of it. So pretty cool cast. It's directed by Brian Helgeland.
And Hagelin? That guy right there, I will say, that guy makes one of my favorite movies of all time beyond just A Knight's Tale. Mm-hmm. He did Mel Gibson's Payback, if you've ever seen that one before.
Oh, yeah, of course I have.
Yes. Now, in the top off payback, this is the thing what I love about the movie, is there's the theatrical version, which is pure amazing. Mm-hmm. But then there's the director's cut version that Brian has. It came out like 6 years later, and it has a completely different third act in it. So, like, I mean, like 25 minutes of the movie's like brand new there, and it has different scenes throughout it. And the difference between the two is, like, you know, the original Payback has like that kind of modern noir sort of look to it. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit kind of funny, but still very violent at the same time, where the other one's just very like hardcore 70s, and it's brutal and violent. And not nearly as funny, but still kind of funny in a dark, you know, like almost Martin Scorsese style way. Mm. Both amazing versions. I love those films so much. I mean, and then it's technically a remake of Point Blank from Lee Marvin. That version of it's super amazing too. Mm. Sorry. When I saw that his name appeared there, I was like, oh shit, I forgot.
We should probably do that one soon, because that way, you know, we have a Brian Hegelin double feature. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right.
Yeah, I think.
It's pretty close.
Hegelin, whatever. But he also, not beyond that, he wrote a bunch of other stuff. He wrote The Postman with Kevin Costner.
Mm. So. Yeah, he's wrote a lot of stuff. And he's directed 42, the Jackie Robinson movie, which was, I thought, pretty good.
Yeah. And then did you ever see Highway to Hell?
Mm-mm.
He wrote that one, too. That movie's one of my, if there was another movie that went along with Last Action Hero for me growing up, that movie right there, it's so good.
Mm.
So good. It.
Yeah,
Brian, highly recommended.
Brian Hegelin, you know, doesn't really get as much credit as he probably deserves. Now, he also wrote Man on Fire, which is amazing, and then LA Confidential.
That's a great movie, too. Yeah.
Which is really, really good. I think it won Best Picture. So he's got a nice little, filmography, and he did that really real quick, just branching off. I was mentioning historical fiction. I mentioned Gladiator. I love Ridley Scott. Mm-hmm. He wrote that boring ass Robin Hood movie with Russell Crowe, which was probably the most disappointed I've ever been in a movie.
See, I enjoyed it, but it's not my favorite Robin Hood out of all of them, I would say.
No, well, I was disappointed because of what I knew it could be. I'm like,
yeah,
I was expecting it to be one of my favorite all-time movies. And it
should have been like one of the best Robin Hood movies, and it was kind of like, oh, that. It was more like one's like, oh, it was kind of cool, but not.
Hmm.
It wasn't Errol Flynn Robin Hood. It wasn't Cartoon Fox Robin Hood.
It was boring.
It wasn't Sean Connery Robin Hood. Like, yeah.
No, it wasn't any of those. But yeah.
Did you like it more than the sci-fi Robin Hood one that came out last, like? 5 years ago, or whatever.
You talking about the one with, oh gosh,
with the King's
Taron Egerton? Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't watch it.
It was good, but like it was in that similar that similar feeling as that Ridley Scott Robin Hood one.
It looks like they bought the clothes from that like Gap.
It was just, like one of those ones like it had potential where it should have been really amazing, but it's just like a middle of the road movie, you know. Mm. I wouldn't say I hate it, but I wouldn't say it was like it was nothing amazing either. Mm. I'll just watch anything Robin Hood. Like that's one of those things that like if Robin Hood's there, I'm watching it.
I'm like that with just historical fiction in general. I'll pretty much give everything a chance. And but this one, I mean, great film. Brian Hegelin wrote and directed it, mm-hmm. and produced it, which so he had kind of full reign. If he wasn't so involved with this, there's no way it would have got off the ground.
Well, he must have had a deal because of how Payback went, and they like kicked him out at the last second so they could just shoot it themselves. Mm-hmm. I bet you that's why he said, I'm not doing this unless I get all three. You know, that's it. You got to give me full control or not at all. And mm-hmm. I bet you that's the reason, because Payback's right before this movie, and they booted him off that movie like two-thirds through it. You know, and said, no, we'll finish it. And granted, as I said, I like both versions, but you know, and the special features, he's not the most happy about just getting kicked off.
No, I'm sure he's not. That. I'm sure he's not. Especially since that movie ended up being great anyway, but if that director's cut is amazing as you say,
And I'll say this, I don't think that the director's cut's better than the other one. I like them in just two different ways. They're both amazing in their own way, but they're each their own kind of film.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this movie's overall well-directed. I mean, I could understand if somebody wanted to make the argument, well, maybe he should have just wrote it and maybe somebody else could have directed it. Because the strong point in this movie is definitely the characters.
Yeah.
The characters are incredibly well written. And Chaucer in particular, which is a fictional character, but also not fictional the way they do it in this movie. Paul Bettany in this film, one of my favorite performances ever, period. Like, so, so good. Just what he does with Chaucer is hilarious to me. And he just, it's just a really creative way to bring him into the story, because I'll put it this way. I was writing that's my first mishap with the new podcast arm. I was writing a little screenplay a while back, just like a little joke thing, and like about a bunch of rednecks that were going to do this heist thing. And I was trying to come up with who the driver was, the driver character. And I thought, oh, he's like Dale Earnhardt. And then I thought, wait, he is Dale Earnhardt. It's Dale Earnhardt. Like, that's the character. So they, in this movie, they're like, okay, well, he's like Chaucer. And they're like, wait, no, it is Chaucer. Yeah, he is. It just put him in the movie. Like, you don't understand.
Well, let him chew that scenery up. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
God. I love that they did that in this movie. And Paul Bettany does chew the scenery up. You know, if it wasn't for the Avengers, he thought his career was over. And really? Now he's doing, yeah, he thought, it, you know, he was in a couple bad movies. He did that really bad, like the sequel to Da Vinci Code, which was terrible.
Oh, I think he was Angels and Demons?
Yeah, whatever that was. I think he was like...
Wasn't he in the first one, too? Maybe I could be wrong, but...
I don't know. Maybe it was the first one. I can't remember. It blended all together. But, man, Paul Bettany is so good.
Yeah, no, he's super good, especially in this one, too. This is where he just, like, totally kills it. The speeches he has in here, just the witty dialogue and so on. And, I mean, I definitely think that's also, like, that is the strong point, is definitely, like, the dialogue of the characters. But it does really come together with just great shots. I think the directing is very much there. You could tell that, like, all three elements really do come together. There's not really a weak link, I don't think, in any of that. Like, putting the movie together, directing it, writing it, and so on, like... Mm-hmm. I think it all really comes together for a very, very solid flick.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Mark Addy and Alan Tudyk, too. I mean, they're kind of like the R2-D2 C-3PO of the story. Like, they're just kind of like, you're not really seeing it through their eyes, but they're there throughout the whole thing. And, you know, they're kind of guiding William on this adventure. Going ahead of this movie, I don't really get emotional in movies. This movie is the only... It didn't get me this time. This is the movie, the only movie that can get me to tear up on a consistent basis. Night's Tale, for some reason, you wouldn't think this would be the movie, but man, the third act in this...
When he finds his dad?
It's the whole thing. Okay, so if you've never seen A Night's Tale, just a little synopsis to it. It's essentially, it's based off, you know, A Knight's Tale, the Canterbury Tales or whatever, old-ass story. It's old as shit, so that's all you need to know. But this one isn't. And so it's a sports movie, and essentially they're peasants, and they're just kind of like, I don't know, what squires, handmaids, whatever you like, essentially, to this knight who goes jousting and does stuff. At the very opening of the movie, he dies. And William, who is... not of noble birth, decides he is going to become a knight and compete in these tournaments and change his stars. Like, that's kind of what the movie's about. And all the way through there, you know, he meets, he finds a love interest, and there's a really, really awesome villain played by Rufus Sewell. That's really good in there. But the third act, what's so great about this movie is William is very, very persistent. He's determined, no matter what, all the odds, to he's going to make something of himself, even though, like, he could literally be beheaded for trying to do so. And so it builds it up through this whole movie. And, like, when they do win, he uses that money to better himself, and it just keeps going. So at the end of the movie, when they get to that scene where the payoff with Prince Edward, that's the scene where they knight him, gets me every single time. Every single time.
Okay, it's that one thing that's kind of interesting about it, because it's like there's like halfway into the movie or whatever, he meets Prince Edward, and everybody's always like, oh, that's the prince. Well, I'm not going to go joust him. What are you, crazy? You know what I mean? And then it's like, really, Heath Ledger's like, I got nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly.
So he goes and he rides out and they joust each other and whatnot. And Prince Edward kind of looks at him and is like, he's like, thanks. Everybody always walks away from me. He's like, I just want to, you know, come out here and do this. I pretty much want to come out here and be a renegade.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to put the crown at risk for my own personal fun.
I'm like the Teddy Roosevelt of this time period.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, it's really clever how they do that in this movie, because it's there's two instances where they meet. There's the one where William just beats his ass at the very beginning, and he's like, hey, I can't finish, but I want to keep my dignity, so let me, I don't know what they do exactly, but basically they ride past each other and the match is finished, so it's not like the equivalent
they do like
of a DNF.
Draw?
Yeah.
Or like, yeah, I don't... It's weird because like, does that make it any better? That's always because like to the fans, they're gonna be like, "Oh, what the hell's going on?" You know, that's it's like taking a knee. You know,
yeah,
that's what it sort of felt like. Nobody likes that except the guy taking the knee because he knows he doesn't get tackled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a really cool, interesting way to bring this all together, because it's, you know, at the beginning of the movie, it does actually show it at the beginning of the movie. At one point, William is with his father, who he loves, but he's given to this knight, I guess, and he's taught to read and do all these different things. So later in the movie, his dad's blind, and he goes and finds his dad, and there's like that whole scene where like they're cheering his name, and he's like, "Your father heard that," and I'm like, "Oh man, that whole like all the payoffs." There's so many payoffs at the end of this movie. And little things that they built up to, and every character gets one, but William, Heath Ledger, gets all of them. And it's just, oh man, it's gluttonous almost, the amount of payoffs you get in this movie.
Could you just imagine with all those payoffs coming, but if it had like the alternate like 70s cut where he loses right there, or when he gets stabbed by the broken lance or whatever, like that's it, like he doesn't survive from it, and it's like that's just the ending to this whole movie we had.
Basically, the alternate ending would be Braveheart. The ending of Braveheart, like where he's just pulling his
like
out.
Have you ever seen the original cut of Clerks?
Mm-mm.
Okay, in the original version of Clerks, because, you know, you're watching a comedy the whole time. You're having the greatest time and everything like that. The very last scene in the very first cut of that Clerks movie is that a robber comes in and shoots Dante. Just a bunch of times, he falls back, bleeding out there, and it just cuts the credits, no music, and all you hear is just sort of like a cash register in the background. It's really like the most terrible ending, but at the same time, I almost think it's like so ballsy. And I mean, I see why they changed it, because that would be like having American Pie, and then at the very end, Jason Biggs is just brutally like murdered. And you're like, whoa, shit, that was what that movie was leading to.
I would have actually liked American Pie better if it did that, actually.
Just hard cut to this violence, and then like I just love the classic cut to credits, no music.
Yeah,
so everybody in the theater's just there with their own thoughts.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I'm glad they didn't do this with this film. You really can't. You can't like have a scene though in the middle of the movie where they do a choreographed dance to Golden Years by David Bowie.
And then have the bad guy win at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just that this movie is not that movie. Like, everybody would hate it.
No, that would be the end of this movie. You'd never hear about that film again.
It would be like that movie with Liam Neeson with the wolves.
Oh, yeah.
He's like building up the whole movie, and the trailers build it up. Like, Liam Neeson's going to fight wolves. I'm watching the shit out of that. And then he doesn't fight the wolves. Spoiler alert, don't ever watch it. What is it, The Gray, I think it's called, or something?
The Gray, I think it was.
Yeah, don't watch that if you haven't, because you'll
It had CG wolves, too. It wasn't like he was wrestling real wolves.
No. Yeah. Always get real wolves, especially when you have Liam Neeson. Highly, highly recommend this movie if you've never seen it. Definitely one of my favorite it's in my top 10. Mm-hmm. It's in my top 10 movies of all time, because it's such a fun watch. It's like, if you're if you're trying to do something, like succeed at something, and you need a pick-me-up, this movie is the perfect. Is to me, it's even better than Rocky for that. Because Rocky's such a good character piece that you just almost feel sad some parts of the movie. But this movie, it's just uplifting the whole way through. It's exciting. It's funny.
Well, and this one's more action-packed, because that's the thing, is Rocky's almost more of a drama at the end of the day, where this one's like a I would say Night's Tale's a straight-up action movie.
Oh, yeah.
More than anything. It's, you know, that's like what its first and foremost genre is it's action all the way. Like, you get great jousting over and over and over again in this one, and then the rest of it's all like the icing on the cake almost, the comedy, the music, you know, the extra little bells and whistles and so on in there.
Mm-hmm. I agree. This movie... I wish it could have been more.
It really could have been like, I mean, maybe someone would say that it would burn itself out if it had like two other movies, but I feel this is one of those ones that could have pulled it off, and I think would have still had a lot of fun with it. Like, it could have gone to different places even.
Yeah, I think it could have worked one more time, just a different adventure or something else going on. I don't know what you would have done with it. But I would have liked to have seen more of this. And man, rest in peace, Heath Ledger, because you're watching this movie and he's so charming in it. And he's so like, you root for him so hard. He shows all this empathy, especially towards Paul Bettany's character, well, it's Chaucer. And, you know, he's got all these great qualities and you just root for him all the way. And then that's got a few years later is playing the Joker.
Yeah.
Better than anybody's done it. Like, what a. Man, I wish I could bring him back, because good Lord, he was so good.
Yeah, because this is, to me, like, I know everybody always thinks of the Joker, but this to me always feels like this is the defend of Heath Ledger movie. Like, more than anything else, like, I would put this as, like, this is his pinnacle, you know, achievement film, I think. I think he just knocks it out, like, on every way.
Well, it's his vehicle, for sure. I mean, look, all the posters, it's his face, it's his giant ass face, like, on everything. And they're making him as a star, which at this point in time, he was known, but he wasn't like this A-list anything. And they're putting this movie on his shoulders because I guess Patriot was before this.
Yeah, but I think this was being almost like put together kind of during the Patriot. And then I think the Patriot kind of came out. It's like, okay, this guy can work better now. Because at first I think they were kind of iffy, and then the Patriot came out, and they're like, oh well, he kind of knocked it out on that film.
Yeah, great in that.
Because Patriot was the one I felt like there. I mean, then there's like the 10 Things I Hate About You. I know that's always like the other big one.
He was in Monsters Ball, wasn't he?
Was that movie? Was that 99 or 2001?
I don't even know what year that was, but he was in that, right? Didn't he like commit suicide in that?
Maybe.
I think that's the movie he did.
That's another one of those movies. I remember when that came out, I remember seeing, I don't know, bits and pieces. Maybe I saw the whole thing, but it was that movie that, like, in a sense of that type of year, people talked really highly about, and I was just like, eh, that's not that interesting. Yeah. That's what I just remember, like, as a kid. Like,
it's one of those Academy Award movies that you watch one time.
Yeah, it's like one of those ones where, you know, you're like, well, I'm just waiting for, you know, Clone Wars to come out. I don't know what
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. But if you've never seen Night's Tale, what are you doing?
It is like one of those movies that, like, no matter how much we talk about it, like, you don't know like how impressively amazing it is until you like sit down and watch this film.
Yeah, it's fun. It's not high art in terms of, it's not super amazing cinematography or super amazing score, which I actually do like when the score gets to those big grand moments. I actually really like the score, but you know, there's nothing to write home about. But man, it's in terms of writing and the characters and the tone. Perfect. It really, really knows what it is, and it knocks that out of the park.
Speaking of cinematography, though, I will say there is one scene in there that always stood out real well. There's that part where Heath Ledger and the main girl or whatever have the kind of argument, like, in the church, and it's shot, like, is one super wide shot for, like, it goes on for, like, it seems like 5 minutes. It's probably not that long. It's probably only, like, 3 minutes, but it's, like, no cuts in it. It's a very wide shot, and it kind of pans back and forth through the church as they kind of walk back and forth talking to each other. I mean, they're almost so far away that you could pretty much just dub in their lines later on to make it easier for, like, you know, putting it together, but I always thought that scene looked really cool. And it's like almost like it's a very like artsy, it almost feels like it's out like of a Woody Allen movie or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's in here and it's just kind of got the cool church backdrop with like, you know, the stained glass and everything like that. And as they're kind of having their argument, you know, you get like the priest coming up being like, this is pretty much a library, you crazy heathens, you know. But that scene right there is like one of those ones that stands out. So I think it does have those moments in there of like some really creative looking shots and so on like that. I mean, maybe it's not like, you know, like a Tony Scott kind of shot type film or something like that, but
I was just thinking that
it still looks pretty good. And then the other thing that's kind of like, speaking just of like this being like that early days DVD one, I kind of forgot because I was watching it on my DVD, is this is one of those movies that has like that good time period where they just gave you great special features. Because that's something I miss so much. It's like, God, it seems like in about the last 10 years, if not maybe even slightly longer by now, you just don't, other than like movies that are like older movies put back together and, you know, given like the full treatment or something like that, it's like the general movie that comes out nowadays, like you just never get any special features on it. You're lucky to get maybe like a 10-minute documentary or something like that. But this was like right at that golden age or the start of it, like kind of about – not those first days of DVDs, but right in the 2000s, pretty much post-Matrix. I think Matrix really makes a big difference in so much stuff. But where you would get a DVD and it's like, oh, here's also like an hour's worth of special features on there for a movie like Night's Tale that generally you wouldn't even think of it having that much special features. But it's like, oh, this is amazing. You know, all these behind-the-scenes things, the commentaries, director stuff, deleted scenes. Like, there's so much going on. Well,
that's how it should be when you – because you're owning a movie.
Like, yeah.
You own it. Like, when you purchase something like that, you should get all that stuff. Because it's you're saying, okay, I'm taking my money. I want to spend, like, $20, $25 to own this film forever. So it really means a lot to me. So I'd like to have all that extra shit. That's how it should be. Yeah.
I mean, I
wish I watched the DVD now so I could have went back and watched those special features. I haven't watched them probably, you know, 15, 16 years. Yeah.
Well, I was watching some of them kind of getting like kind of refreshed for this movie again and so on. But I mean, I know why they kind of stopped doing it because, you know, probably at least 75% of people never put the second disc in. Well, this doesn't have a second disc, but, you know, in general, would just leave that second disc of like Spider-Man 2. It sat there untouched the whole time. And I think they just got to the point where they're like, you know what? We're really only making the special features for realistically probably 10% of the people.
That's probably true.
And I think it's like, so, I mean, I kind of get that. But that used to almost be the thing that made DVDs stand out so much. I think that was their whole thing of, like, selling it over a VHS. Because the average Joe's just going to be like, I got a VCR. Why do I need a DVD player? You know, you're not going to win them over with the widescreen argument yet.
Yeah.
But you could say, hey, you're going to get all these special features, behind-the-scenes stuff, you know, commentaries, all these fun things. You're not going to get that on VHS unless it's like one of those, like, Alien 3 ones that comes with an extra... cassette tape or something.
Yeah. I think this Lost World Jurassic Park I have up here, the double thing, has like
you
a
got the double one?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it has that.
Because every once you, but those things were so expensive. It's like, there was no way I was ever going to own any of those as a kid. It would be like $35 for that version.
Yeah, I had to wait 20 some odd years and get it via, you know, on VHS by some guy at a bar. That's literally how I have it. I'm not even joking. Shout out to Robin. Thanks, Robin. You're the guy at the bar. But, yeah, I mean, I do kind of miss that stuff. Physical movies are the way to go. And I know they're not done yet, but they're dying.
And yeah, it's not that far off that I really don't give it more than 10 years. 10 years maximum.
Yeah.
That's a maximum, you know. And that's where you just find, like, that. But in probably 5 years, the general stores aren't going to carry them anymore.
Mm-mm. No,
you know, you'll be buying them off eBay and so on, you know, till the days we die. But
yeah, oh my gosh. Well, anyway, watch Night's Tale on DVD. Go watch the special features. They might be on YouTube. I don't even know.
Yeah, you probably get the Blu-ray version. You'd probably get even more stuff on.
Yeah, Blu-ray, DVD. Just watch the whole thing. Watch the special features. Enjoy the shit out of it. This is my first entry into our journey of our About Me. Movies that, you know, framed our formidable years. So stay tuned for more of that. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff. And I think the next couple episodes, we're going to have maybe some guests come along with us. Won't tell you what we're doing, but I'm really excited for those episodes. And I've got some other really big stuff in mind. We'll take a little break to go back to the 80s. And then we'll kind of jump back into the About Me movies, I guess. and then it won't be too long for our big 4th of July spectacular, which I'm really excited about this year,
too. It's going to be another Heath Ledger blowout. Wait, that sounds wrong to say it that way. Heath Ledger extreme party. I mean...
We're not showing Monsters Ball. No, we're showing... Heath Ledger's in one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of you could probably figure out where we're doing Independence Day. Come on. It's the 25th anniversary. And then we're also doing maybe the Patriot. I don't know.
Possibly. We're going All-American.
Yeah, All-American.
Super All-American.
Yeah, nothing says American.
America's like coming back, dude. I kid you not. There was, in that Justice Society movie that just came out, they finally said, they finally had Superman. Actually, Flash said it technically, but like truth, justice, and the American way was brought back. So I was like, yeah, we're getting back to a Team America time.
Yeah, we beat COVID.
As long as you bleed red, white, and blue, it protects you.
Yeah.
So I guess it also works if you're British too, because they bleed red, white, and blue.
I'm immune to communism, snake venom, and COVID-19. I ain't getting any of them. Oh man, and poison ivy. I'm you know, but anyway, yeah. So things are lightening up, man. I think, you know what? The last thing to finish this off with, I think, because we went through this, we went through some shit. 2020. I have a feeling the rest of the 20s are going to be like the roaring 20s. There's going to be this air of optimism. And we might get some more fun, breezy movies like this. Because people want that. I mean, look at how Will Kong versus Godzilla did. They just want escapism.
I think so. I think that the PC culture that heavily occupied the 2010s is kind of like, people are just kind of going, you know what? We don't care. Things don't have to be so perfect. Let's just have fun again. I think we might be getting a change in kind of like, we're not nitpicking everything's actions and, mm-hmm. you know, breaking things down like critical and so on. I think we're going to kind of go back to like, you know what? Remember when life was fun? Remember the 90s?
Yeah. We might get some of that. Not on Twitter. You'll never get that on Twitter.
No. Because that's where the hate mongrels exist. They, God. Float around there.
The worst.
At least the upside of Twitter, though, is that you can, if you see one of those, you can always tell Twitter to get rid of them for you.
Yeah, that's true.
Same thing of YouTube. You can always at least let Google know, be like, hey, I don't want this content on my thing. I mean, it makes, you know what I mean? It's not, I'm not blocking them and or doing anything to block their stuff, but just don't show it on my feed at least.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we can rant forever.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you get a chance to watch Night's Tale if you've never done it. I really look forward to y'all listening to these next few episodes. There's so much good stuff coming up. It's going to be awesome. And then maybe some, I really want to kind of dabble into some new areas too, some non-movie review episodes. So working on some of that stuff as well. But you can always find Via VHS on Twitter, if you are brave enough to go there, at Via VHS. You can find it on Instagram at Via VHS Pod. You can't find it on Facebook because fuck that noise. but yeah, you can find it pretty much everywhere else. But links down below, Old Man Orange. Any updates? Anything you want to share regarding any new non-Via VHS related projects for Spencer?
By the time this comes up, there could be Old Man Orange podcast episode 500. Mm. 499 is already up, so by the time I feel this one's about ready to go, it should be there. And then beyond that, I'm getting close to getting Pizza Boys graphic novel 3 ready. It's pretty much there. It's at that kind of like final, like, let's just kind of read it over a bunch of times and just see if there's anything that's misspelled or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm. It's amazing how many times you can read something over and still like find, oh, look at this. I probably should fix that one. Right there. Probably nobody else will notice it, but I know it's going to bother me now that I know it's there.
I understand. I definitely understand that. Like the hum in the microphone a couple weeks ago. Like, I know it's there. Okay.
You know, I remember my thing was like, hey, most people are going to be listening to it in their car. They're not going to notice the microphone.
I'm so glad it happened though, because things are so much better now. But
I'm surprised you probably would have come back and be like, "Yeah, but what if they're listening to it on a Tesla?"
Yeah, we'll talk about that after the episode. Anyway, thank y'all for listening. Check out oldmanorange.com. Find us on social media if you're brave enough to do so. And with that, Via VHS is out.